Hey, anime friends, coming at you with a different intro for this podcast episode. This is the extended cut of the video I did on Hiroko Izumi, the director of Free Watobi Swim Club, Banana Fish, and Skate the Infinity. I decided to post the full-length, minimally edited audio here because I, again, talk way too much in this video, and I don't want my research to go to waste. If you're a Patreon member, you got access to this podcast and the video over a week ago. But since I have love for my podcast listeners, I thought I'd drop this extended cut of the episode on the podcast for free, just so you could have access to it, because I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy! Hayao Miyazaki, the founder of Studio Ghibli, is a household name in both eastern and western parts of the world, and new anime directors have begun to make waves with globally successful movies like the works of Suzumi's Makoto Shinkai and Bell's Mamoru Hosoda. Even anime series directors are becoming more memorable, especially those known for their genre-bending accolades like Cyberpunk's Hiroyuki Imaishi and Cowboy Bebop's Shinichiro Watanabe. These directors' ability to alter the established worlds and narratives that fans are already familiar with in anime and create something different yet more impactful than ever before is what makes them more memorable. So what if I told you there is another anime director capable of doing the same thing? A director who has disrupted the status quo of a particular genre of anime in a way no other director of these types of series has yet been able to do. But sadly, most of you have probably never heard of them, and if you are familiar with their name, you are probably part of a select group of fans who are dedicated enough to look into them after seeing one of their works. Despite being able to capture the attention of multiple demographics through the unprecedented success of their series, the reason you haven't heard about this incredible director may be because they've made a name for themselves by appealing to a very specific and niche audience. How many directors do you know changed the genres associated with their works in such a way that their series became the most successful and most disliked among entire fandoms? Today we're going to learn the story of Hiroko Izumi, a director who has taken the world of sports anime and more by storm. We'll break down how she was able to create multiple successful franchises by making use of an unspoken tactic that appeals to a particular fan base the anime fandom as a whole often hates to acknowledge. Welcome, anime friends. If you're new here, hi, my name is Phoenix. And as always, before we begin our video, you must make sure to grab your cup because it's time to spill the anime tea. Today, if you are familiar to this channel, you might notice that my cup is a little different. That's because I wanted to give a special thank you and shout out to Ocha Anime and Samantha, who sent me a couple of their teas to try. And this is not a sponsor. This is purely off cuff, just off of my own opinion. This is some really good tea. It's just a small business that makes anime inspired tea. I think you should go check them out. So make sure to leave the link in the description. My favorite is the Shinigami Rise, a really good black tea with great flavor that I love drinking in the morning. So check them out and let's start with the video. To understand Izumi and the success of her works, we need to review her origins. Hiroko Izumi is about as mysterious as any other anime creator or director or mangaka out there. Even when you do a quick search of her name, the first thing you might come upon is this image, which actually isn't of her, it's actually of a pianist with the same name. So it gets a bit confusing when you go on some articles and look up her and see this image when it's not actually her. They are two totally different people. Because I couldn't find a photo of her that exists on the internet, we're going to be using this photo as a reference to her. Despite not knowing what Izumi looks like, though, we still know a lot about her. Thanks to many interviews that she's done over the years, including some that have been translated by fans who are really into her work. Some things that we do know about the creator are that she graduated from Osaka Municipal College of Design, she has a passion for cool characters and concepts, and was originally inspired to become an animation director by Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah, you heard that right, Yu-Gi-Oh! And if you are familiar with Izumi and her works, you might be thinking, how in the world was she inspired by Yu-Gi-Oh!? But it all makes sense in a second. Izumi was particularly impressed by the animation director, Takehiro Kagami of Yu-Gi-Oh!, who inspired her to want to become an animation director herself. She says in a February Talk interview, "I was fascinated by the absolute power of drawing, the technique to make any design attractive, the powerful layout and the lively theatrical creation, all of which made me think, I want to be someone who can do this kind of work too." Izumi enjoyed the theme of friendship and interpersonal dramas at the heart of Yu-Gi-Oh!, something that I even can also attest to because I was one of those weird nerds as a kid growing up watching Yu-Gi-Oh! And 4Kids who actually liked watching the show more than I liked playing the game, because in the show, I liked seeing the characters and their personalities and their relationships play out. I was a huge fan of Joey in the English dub 4Kids version, and his whole backstory with the sister, I was invested, I was hooked. But I hated the card game because I didn't like doing math. So I really respected Sumi for being inspired by Yu-Gi-Oh! Of all things to create shows about friendship and bonds. As Utsumi herself states, friendship became an unshakable theme that was indispensable to the work I was involved in. Other random facts about her include that she was once on a swimming team in high school, which will be important for later. She is also a lover of upper bodies, which we'll also explore later. And this one little insignificant fact that she was part of the subsidiary company of Kyoto Animation, Animation Do, from 2006 to about 2018. And by insignificant, I mean this is major. Like, this is huge. If you know anything about Kyoto Animation, you know that they are one of the staples in the anime industry globally. Kyoto Animation, if you are familiar with them, you probably have heard of shows like Clannad, Lucky Star, K-On!, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, and many, many more. These are all hit shows of the mid to late 2000s, and still to this day, people use some of the characters from these series to hide their identities on the internet. So that's how popular and influential they are. And actually, Hiroko Utsumi herself worked on all of these shows as key animators, which is huge. It's hugely important to her and her career, because later on, she would go on to become an episode director of certain series as well, including the irreverent comedy Nichijou, the detective slice of life anime that is one of my personal favorites of the Kyoto Animation lineup, Hyouka, and the silly rom-com series Love, Chunibyo, and Other Delusions, before going on to direct her own works for the studio in 2013 with a breakout hit that immediately captured fans' attention the moment they saw the teaser of the characters and the premise. But before we open that can of swimming boys, I just want to take a second to acknowledge one thing. Oftentimes, when people talk about directors in anime, they kind of forget that whole teams of people are used to work on these series. Specifically for the KyoAni series we're going to be talking about today, unfortunately, a lot of the people who lent their work and their time and their effort to make these series really good passed away in the KyoAni arson attack of 2019. So I just want to give a second to remember those and, bring up that the importance of teamwork in animation and direction. Now that we have an understanding of Utsumi and her career, let's talk about the boys who would forever change the way sports anime would be viewed and watched, and by who. Only a year before Haikyuu would sweep through the fandom and boost the popularity of sports anime across demographics, Free Iwatobi Swim Club, which I'll be shortening to just Free because it'll just be easier overall, was already causing commotion and stirring up emotions among fans across the world. With a group of scantily clad teenage swimmers bursting onto the scene with a studio that previously emphasized lovable moe girls and the slice of life romantic relationships they'd often get into, Free not only broke the status quo of Kyoto Animation and what they were shown to be capable of, it was also the company's first ever sports series. What started as a teaser commercial between other KyoAni series like Tamako Market ended up capturing the attention of the Japanese internet, sparking rumors that led to it quickly becoming one of Kyoto Animation's most anticipated, beloved, and successful franchises once it was greenlit and aired. And it is often considered still as one of the most popular franchises by the company among fans even today. For the uninitiated into the world of water, friendships, bonds, and upper bodies, as Utsumi herself calls it, here's a brief breakdown of what the series is about. Haru is a phenomenal swimmer who loves the water, but he's not interested in joining teams or competitions. He just has one goal: to swim free, on his own terms. But when a couple of students decide to start a swim club at his high school, Haru finds himself roped into joining, which ends up reigniting the spark he once had as a child for competitive swimming alongside the joy he feels participating with his friends. Free is actually a loose adaptation of a light novel titled High Speed, and it actually was chosen because Kyoto Animation has an award every year where they pick certain light novels and stories which could eventually become animated. Another popular series from the company to do this is Sound Euphonium. In the High Speed novel, a group of elementary school boys compete together in swim meets and practices and, explore their rivalries and relationships with one another. But Hiroko Utsumi had a different idea for a take on the series. She chose to age up the characters and add in a healthy amount of fan service to appeal to a broader audience. And by broad, I mean one demographic in particular, but again, we'll get to that later. And since Utsumi was also on a swim team in high school, as mentioned earlier, she felt comfortable making the anime swim team in the story feel authentic and enjoyable. Additionally, with years of experience working on series like K-On! And Clannad, Utsumi took the bread and butter of Kyoto Animation's most notable aspect, Moe, and shifted the lens from cute girls doing cute things to cute boys doing cute things, but also being really passionate, also having girly names, also never wanting to wear a shirt because they're always swimming, and much more. The story of these boys played into the same tropes that are often found and loved in most sports anime as well, which helped it connect to lots of sports anime fans, which at the basis of most sports anime is the idea of teamwork and rivalry. But Utsumi and her team was able to take these relationships a step further by making them the key part of the plot's progression, often overshadowing competitions while still making those competitions a key part of the drama between characters, and always centering a love for the water and swimming between the characters at the forefront. But this type of storytelling in sports anime would show up more often after Free aired. Not to say that series like Haikyuu were inspired by Free necessarily in terms of storytelling, because Haikyuu had been in publication for a long time before it became an anime in 2014, a year after Free aired. However, it could be that because so many people were into Free, so many new audiences were getting into Free, that it led to more people being more interested in series like Haikyuu and other sports anime later on, which kind of started to share, which also shared similar elements and then garnered similar audiences as well. All that to say, there's really only two reasons that you're probably familiar with Free in the first place. Yeah, it's either one, because you've watched it or seen it probably as a youth, maybe as a teenager, and it was instantly drawn in by the beautiful, sensitive boys and eventually possibly came to love it. Or two, you were stumbling around looking for a good sports anime, this one was recommended or popped up for you, and then you found out that it's kind of the bane of the sports anime fandom's existence, because most people just dismiss it as a series that's fan service for girls. No matter how you feel about the series, however, there is one fact that remains. Free is a blueprint for proving the success of a series that appealed to a profitable and passionate audience that mostly consisted of women. Kyoto Animation, Utsumi, and the team of Free were able to tap into the lucrative but also very secretive audience that shonen sports manga had been appealing to for decades. Something I talk about more in my How Shoujo Changed Shonen Forever video, which I might be mentioning a lot, so just keep that on the back burner, probably check it out next if you haven't seen it yet. But I will be talking about it a little bit later on. Yeah, though Free isn't the first or last series to make sports boys attractive to a predominantly female audience, it is one of the most notable considering it was headed by a woman and made to appeal specifically to other women straight up. Yeah, very unabashedly. Free's unbridled success can be seen in how much the studio has and even still appeals to the strongly dedicated fan base. According to KyoAni's website itself, which lists all of their works and how many works they've made based off of a single series, Free has gotten 3 anime seasons, 2 recap movies, and 3 full-length original movies, including one that just premiered last year, I think, but it hasn't been added to any streaming platforms yet as of the making of this video, which kind of sucks because I want to watch it. But anyway, yeah, the amount of work for this single franchise far outweighs any of the other series on the Kyoto Animation docket, basically, including really popular anime series like Sound Euphonium, which does technically have 7 titles, so it's only 1 title behind Free. However, that's only if you include Liz and the Bluebird, which kind of acts like a standalone spinoff from the original. But I digress. Anyway, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya only has 4 titles, and K-On! Only has 3 titles, which is kind of insane. The unbridled success of Free was just the first step in Utsumi's directorial career. After the second season of the work, she stepped away from directing the series and from Kyoto Animation to take on another anime adaptation, this one of a popular manga from the 80s, which would end up being her most genre-defining work. In this next work, Itsumi expanded her potential by stepping away from intense sports rivalries and friendships and into the world of nitty-gritty New York street gangs. In Banana Fish, we follow a boy named Edgy, a journalism student shadowing his mentor on a trip to America as they do a piece on New York City gangs. This leads him to meeting respected gang leader Ash Lynx, who lives a life of crime. As Edgy becomes more entwined in Ash's life, he's taken on an adventure to help Ash track down the drug that his brother won't stop talking about, Banana Fish, which unravels a complex crime plot that changes Ash's and Edgy's worlds forever. Banana Fish is an adaptation of a manga of the same name written by Akimi Yoshida for Flowers Comic Magazine in the 1980s. Itsumi expressed that there was more pressure to make a successful adaptation of the work because it came from a really popular source material. But Itsumi still decided to put her own spin on the series by changing the era in which the story was told in, taking the 1985 setting and replacing it with a modern approach. This allowed her to play with the character's fashion designs and tweak the story in some aspects, as well as stretch her abilities to create an anime with modern techniques and liberties. With Itsumi saying, quote, "I want to shed light on how animation has evolved as a medium when it comes to storytelling, so rather than doing a copy-paste animation, I'm going to let the animation define itself as a general medium, and doing a modern era twist accommodates that. And if you've seen Banana Fish, you can attest to this. It looks really good, and it definitely shows off MAPPA's bones and Itsumi's abilities to create a really high-action, drama-filled series. Though the work is very different from Itsumi's career-defining series, Free, it still capitalizes off of the elements that made her swimming series successful, focusing on a heavy emphasis on the bonds of friendship, or maybe even the bond of soulmates, who in this story also have to face really tragic circumstances. All the groundwork laid by Yoshida-sensei brought to life in Itsumi's modern-era adaptation. This darker series that explored crime and friendship ended up helping to prove Itsumi's potential as a notable anime director. As Banana Fish seemed more able to integrate a broader audience beyond that of Free, since the emphasis of the story was about crime, politics, and revenge, rather than slice of life and shirtless pretty boys. With the more heartfelt moments between characters, most notably Ash and Edgy, the main characters, seemed to evolve from the relationships in Free, with many key moments of the series being slowed down and emphasized in a way that fans of Free were probably already familiar with, masterfully bringing to life heart-stopping relationships and moments that fans of the manga also loved. Crime dramas have always been a beloved staple in anime and even Western media, but there's a particular aspect in Banana Fish that made it stand out above others. The deeply, almost romantic relationship between the two main characters, who also happen to both be boys. Though it's speculated if Ash and Edgy were actually ever in a relationship in the series, it could be playing off a concept that I've brought up before in other videos and that I will be bringing up soon, that I think Itsumi uses not only in Banana Fish, but some of her other works as well. Itsumi wasn't only stepping outside of the genre she was starting to be known for, but also away from the studio she had spent most of her career working at. As she worked with Studio Bones and Studio MAPPA for Banana Fish, she would continue to work with Bones and key animator Akemi Hayashi on yet another popular series, using the momentum garnered from her success to propel her to new places in her career. After the good reception of Banana Fish, Itsumi would return with a series that would take the success of her directorial debut, newly honed drama direction, and penchant for flair and fashion into an unconventional and wholly original sports anime. Introducing the off-the-cuff anime original, Skate the Infinity. Clearly inspired by the grunge of New York City streets in Banana Fish, Skate is a story about two vibrant, street-obsessed skater boys who compete competitively in underground skate competitions. Remember all the way back in the beginning of this video when I mentioned that Itsumi was inspired by Yu-Gi-Oh! And it wouldn't really make sense in terms of all the other works that she has done, how her inspirations came from Yu-Gi-Oh! Well, this one kind of correlates a little bit more, especially because of the character design and the fashion flair in Skate the Infinity. It gives me a vibrancy in life that Yu-Gi-Oh! Did once have in its series. Skate featured the return of Itsumi's signature penchant for shirtless men and intense rivalries, and yet again also applying her real life experience with a sport, this time skateboarding, into her own works. Skater boy Reki invites recent transfer student Longa to the underground skateboard club known as S, where skaters compete in beefs for street cred. The boys bond as Longa, originally a snowboarder from Canada, learns how to skate and ends up becoming a star in the world of S. Itsumi brought back the same premise of Free, boys who bond deeply over a sport that they love, this time bringing it to life in a vibrant skating world unlike anything I've ever seen before. Besides just being a big success, I mean, there's already another season of Skate the Infinity greenlit on its way. This series also marked a turning point in Izumi's career, where once she was told that she had a long way to go in writing compelling friendships and stories, she now was being praised for her own original series that were now getting multiple seasons. Itsumi seems to really hone in on creating interesting yet realistic drama between two friends trying to figure out their place in the world, in the only world where they feel like they could actually belong, the world of competitive skating. Harping back to aspects brought up in Free, Itsumi was able to create more characters to work with as well, because if you're familiar with Free, there's, especially the second season and onward, there's lots of original characters that Itsumi created, Itsumi and her team created for the series that were not in the original light novels that people love. Skate the Infinity is full of Itsumi's own original characters and creations, characters that she cares very deeply about and wants the audience to really love as much as she does. But yeah, in Skate, besides Reki and Longa, we have adult characters like Joe and Cherry who talk and bicker with each other like a married couple, as well as Adam, the most insane and also beloved character in the franchise, who has a relationship with each of the characters that helps to flesh out the extent of his own character as the series goes on. Which, can we take a second to appreciate all the adult characters in Skate the Infinity? I mean, you know, it was great seeing all the boys in Free, even in Banana Fish, you know, they're like 18, 19, but it's great to see like actual fully fledged 20-year-old to 30-year-old adults in a series that explores this unconventional sport where anyone can do it for as long as they're able. It's also refreshing just to see older characters in a series that you actually can ogle and not feel, you know, weird about, you know, when you're an adult anime watcher like me. So yeah, hey Joe, that's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, of course, lying on the background of all of her works is the unspoken but often emphasized references to romance in the series. He was a skater boy, he was from Canada. Can it get any more obvious? Okay, I'm sorry, I just had to add an Avril Lavigne reference for that show. Anyway, I mean, at one point, Longa basically confesses to his mom about his feelings for Reki, and his mom thinks he's talking about, like, a love interest. And Longa is confused because he's just talking about Reki, but I digress. Despite all of the little references, though, there's one important thing to note. None of these boys ever seem to end up in relationships with one another in the end. So despite the references, none of these series, even Banana Fish, though it's heavily debated, are technically considered to be boys' love or BL. Yeah, and if they're not BL, then really, they can only be one other thing. Series made to appeal to one of the most disliked audiences in the anime fandom, which I referenced earlier. Now that I've introduced you to Itsumi's directorial works, you may have noticed a theme among each of them. They all center boys, some sort of action or drama, and most importantly, they all have a similar audience, Fujoshi. This may be like my third time referencing Fujoshi and talking about them, so sorry if I sound redundant, but I'd like to bring them up because, again, they're just a part of the fandom, a part of like these anime and why they exist, and they really don't get talked about unless it's just to talk bad about them when there's a lot more nuance about their existence and how they've affected the anime industry. If you want more backstory on like Fujoshi and who they are and like more information about them, check out the video that I said I would mention a lot earlier, How Shoujo Changed Shonen. It's gonna be in the little thing, it's gonna be in the link in the description and the pinned comment. Check that out. Anyway, Fujoshi is basically a demographic that mostly consists of straight women who find male-to-male relationships appealing and tend to read or watch many boys' love and similar series. But beyond a boys' love, there are many series that have captured Fujoshi's attention over the years, including Shonen Sports series, which, though there is no proven correlation between them, I have high reason to believe is why Free and Skate in particular are such successful series. Basically, series like Captain Tsubasa walked so Prince of Tennis could run, so Free could swim, and Skate could, well, you know, I think you get it. Yeah, you get it by now. Itsumi proved that sports anime made to appeal specifically and directly to women could be insanely popular and profitable. Which is crazy considering that this was already a well-known fact in shonen manga spaces, because they had been subtly capitalizing off of Fujoshi for decades, hence the prettification of boys over time in their series. But unlike most shonen works, Itsumi specifically addressed the Fujo audience upfront and unabashedly, making references to which characters might be shipped together and things in her interviews. Bringing all the elements that Fujoshi seemed to love in popular shonen sports series together in her shows that were meant to appeal almost entirely just to them. Rivalry, action, drama, and of course, bishonen. but adding more elements that fans craved and were deprived of often in high-action sports shonen series, such as slice-of-life moments, emotional character arcs, character-driven plots, deep perspectives on characters' motivations and relationships with their rivals, teammates, and friends, and an emphasis on the relationship of one character with multiple other characters, you know, to cement ships and so division among the fandom. Banana Fish is a slightly different approach to this, since it's not a, you know, sports anime, but it still capitalizes all off of all the same elements. Itsumi brought these elements to a whole different genre with the groundwork already laid out by Yoshida Sensei's manga, a gritty crime drama that broke barriers, still utilizing slice of life moments that made characters form strong bonds, and then completely shattering fans' emotions with really heavy emotional losses and revelations throughout. Hitting on all the emotional tie-ins the manga is known for, and still flexing her own style with a modern twist that continued to popularize the series. Even recently, Utsumi has been greenlighting even more works. Not only is there a second season of Skate to Infinity already greenlit, ready to go, coming out soon, hopefully, there's also another series that was just recently announced, like right before I recorded this video, titled Butchigiri, which Itsumi will be directing and working alongside Studio MAPPA to create. And just by looking at the preview for it, I'm getting a lot of references to like JoJo's and in terms of style and like with a little bit of Skate thrown in there with like graffiti art and stuff in the background. And the premise seems to be about delinquent boyfriends, I mean, boys who are friends, who are fighting demons, which seems to be giving a little bit of Jujutsu Kaisen meets JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And it could be another genre-bending series that helps to popularize, you know, shonen stories, but specifically for an audience that is mostly geared towards women. Which is a technique that I think deserves respect because, you know, Jujutsu Kaisen is great. You know, they give us Gojo, they give us these beautiful men and their relationships with one another. But an entire series dedicated to that also explores demons and fighting and things, but made for us, that deserves recognition. Like, literally, there's this guy with green hair at the end who's, like, eating a sandwich. Like, sir, why do you have to eat a sandwich like that? He's already giving me feelings. I can't. Attractive male characters in an environment that female audiences have already proven to love, mixed in with all the character drama that was once only found in the works of fan fiction creators, is like a Fujoshi fan's dream come true. Hence why so many are drawn to these series and why they tend to be very successful. Because if there's one thing we know about Fujoshi, they have the ability to make any series that they choose really popular, successful, well-known, and spread. Despite Itsumi's many accolades and the respect I believe she deserves, though, especially being able to openly appeal to Fujoshi while many other directors and creators only do it on the down low, this wouldn't be a true The Anime Tea deep dive if I failed to mention some of the criticisms that people have thrown at her work and her decisions within her works. With Free Iwatobi Swim Club, it was successfully able to capture the audience it intended to, but at the expense of falling into the same silent problem that many other series are also known for, sexualizing young characters through fan service. And despite how well fans received Banana Fish, they did criticize one particular aspect of the series, overtly sexualizing traumatized characters in the midst of abuse. Many of the issues we see in Itsumi's works are issues anime fans are familiar with across genres and demographics. The voyeuristic gaze that we see in series like Free are the voyeuristic gaze that we see of the boys in Free are not too dissimilar to some of the depictions in other anime. Add on top of that, traumatized characters having a camera pan over their bodies in the midst of assault or abuse, like in Banana Fish, which can make you feel really skeevy. The more I explore anime, manga, and the creators who make them, the more I understand that anime is often a playground for creators to let their own fantasies roam free and also have fans connect over their shared desires. A global phenomenon many people fixate on is youth, sex, and physical attraction, all of which happen to coincide with teenagers. Attractive characters that never age are in the prime of their lives and that you can interact with in a way that doesn't feel, you know, illegal because they're technically all drawings are more appealing than people in real life, which are a lot more complicated, which may or may not correlate with Japan's declining birth rate, but I digress. But more importantly, it's an aspect of anime that all people, all fans of anime are drawn to. And understanding why that is while also being able to criticize, you know, the weird way it makes us all feel are things that all fans have to grapple with at some point when watching anime. Another criticism that may be unfamiliar to most fans, unless you're already familiar with Fujoshi or you've seen one of my other videos, is this idea of fujoshi bait. I brought up fujoshi bait in my other video about a series called Buddy Daddies, but after reading some comments in that video and also just rewatching it, I feel like I didn't accurately talk about like what fujoshi bait actually is and the many like nuances of it, as well as my own feelings with it. So I'm gonna try to readdress it here better. Basically, fujoshi bait is simply defined as media made to appeal to fujoshi, often implying romantic relationships between male characters or the potential for a romance between them. It's essentially what people in the West might know as shipping culture, where fans ship characters who have a kind of chemistry together on screen. Though this is something kind of almost entirely fabricated in most Western media, in anime and manga, it's actually something that's intentionally put in a very subtle way usually, to draw in a fujoshi audience. This can kind of be tied back to the rise of BL and shoujo manga during the revolution of shoujo manga in the 1960s by the Year 24 group. Not too long after that revolution, there was a rise of creators making fanfiction or doujinshi of shonen sports anime, which featured lots of elements from BL works that were prevalent in shoujo, mixing them with shonen sports series. And many creators went on to successfully create their own series that kind of ended up mixing both worlds, such as with the Clamp group. Yeah, and there's no doubt that there's a high possibility that Itsumi had to have been inspired by some of these works. Though she never explicitly says it in any of the interviews that I found of her, there are many drawbacks to this part of the anime fandom and manga fandom in her works. From references to top and bottom bunks, to the boys sharing a bed together, to them second-guessing CPR techniques and so on in Free, to Ash and Edgy literally kissing and holding each other in Banana Fish, but it's not a BL. Anyway, and Longa talking about his feelings for Reki to his mom, who thinks he's talking about his love interests. There's just so many little things that tease and insinuate a romance between the boys, but it's all part of this process of appealing to a fujoshi audience. Not too different from how a romance anime that focuses on the chase and the lead-up of the characters falling in love tends to end right when the characters are successfully able to acknowledge their feelings for one another. Because, you know, if they go any further, then they kind of ruin this idea of the happily ever after that a lot of romance fans are already familiar with. In the case of fujoshi bait, there often isn't a canonized romantic relationship between characters because it might ruin the imagination of fans who ship different characters together, or even the fans wanting to have characters for themselves. Not directly pairing characters together gives more room for fans to interpret relationships as they seem fit, which is perfect for shippers, doujinshi creators, and fanfiction writers, all exemplified through the sheer amount of hits that I got when I typed in the Free Iwatobi Swim Club tag on AO3 and got almost 16,000 results. I don't know what that means exactly because I'm not an AO3 user, but it seems like a lot of people are making fanfictions on Free. I mean, yeah, are making fanfic about Free, and it leads fans to interact with the work deeper by questioning things like, is Haru in love with Makoto? I don't know, maybe I'll make a fanfiction about that. Or is he in love with Rin? Or is he actually just hydrosexual? You know, he's in love with the water. He wants to be with water. Even Hiroko Itsumi herself has referred to Haru being a water dere, which is like a tsundere, but basically he only shows his true emotions when he is around water. There's also the question of, does Ash love Edgy? Or is their relationship more complex than romance? Are they soulmates? Are they really close friends? What are they in Banana Fish? And also, is Adam gay or just extremely flamboyant in his private life to cope with the insane amount of pressure of being the figurehead of a wealthy company? Who knows? These concepts are ultimately up to the audience to decide for themselves. Though fujo bait is meant to appeal mostly to straight women who enjoy male-to-male relationships, many of the series that capitalize off of this can also be considered queer bait because there's often a romantic relationship insinuated among characters of the same sex, which draws audiences to it hoping for a representation. Queerbaiting refers to the practice of implying non-heterosexual relationships or attraction to engage or attract an LGBTQ audience or otherwise generate interest without ever actually depicting such relationships or sexual interactions, according to the dictionary.com definition, which to many is seen negatively because oftentimes it's used to appeal to a certain audience without actually taking the time to accurately or carefully portray the real-life nuances of like these real people's experiences. Unless you find a doujinshi in the series that fills in the lines for you, you often never see a payoff in Fujoshi bait series, which is what these series kind of bank on. On one hand, we can acknowledge that this bait is bad because it insinuates something that will never actually be stated, at least in most Bishonen cast anime series. And it's used as a way to appeal to an audience in a roundabout sort of way without actually ever having to address real life things. As well as not actually being intended as representation of these people and their lives. But it also continues to promote the idea that if you see two guys on screen or two people of the same sex, you're probably going to ship them, or you have to ship them because they are just are of the same sex. Which might be okay in the context of fictional anime characters, but not when it comes to real life people, which has started to become a really big problem. On the other hand, this type of bait is what drives the success of Utsumi's series as well as many others, Buddy Daddies and other series that I've also mentioned. And it has had a positive impact by, you know, being responsible for bringing fans together, creating community, and encouraging young creators to tell their own stories. It's also been able to bridge the gap between audiences by encouraging fans to connect the series outside of their intended demographics, aka, you know, shonen shoujo, shonen for boys, shoujo for girls. But, you know, mostly only in one direction with shoujo, well, I mean, with girls who read shoujo manga as well as shonen manga, same with anime, but not vice versa, of course. But as much as we can sit here and criticize Utsumi for using this bait in a possibly negative or positive way, she is not the only director to really harp in on this type of storytelling. If you look at any cute girl anime series or cute girl doing cute things anime series, you're gonna see a lot of references, very subtle, kind of similar to Fujoshi bait, but I guess the opposite, where there's girls like kind of confessing their love to one another, you know, being really close to one another, but never actually expressing their sexuality or interest in this other character that also happens to be a girl. And there's a huge fan base of people, mostly men, who look into characters' interactions as well as look at creators' interviews to see if their ship is canonized. So it goes both ways. I also want to bring up, without these bait series, BL and adjacent series, would anime have ever gotten to the point where, you know, more series are coming out that kind of subvert these tropes and actually talk about and address characters, you know, sexuality, and fans are choosing them as good representations? For example, though there's probably only a handful of these, we can probably count them on one hand. I've only come up with a few for this example, but I'm sure there's more. We can talk about how certain series that have come out after Free and all these other kind of Fujoshi bait series are possibly resonating with LGBTQ audiences, like Given, the anime and manga, Bloom Into You, another anime and manga for girls' love, Our Dreams at Dusk, the manga, and Stranger on the Shore, the anime movie. There's a whole studio called Blue Lynx that is dedicated to animating like only BL works, which is kind of incredible. Even in one of my most recent videos discussing Buddy Daddies, many people commented saying that they were able to see themselves or people they know in the story about these two men who are in a platonic relationship raising a child. Which made me ultimately think differently about like representation and how different people are able to connect with the works that they watch and see. These shows may have been intended as bait, but, you know, audiences were able to interpret them the way that they wanted to, and for them it provided representation, which is great. I think there's some good that can come out of the discussions about Utsumi's works, among others. It may not be a direct correlation, but, you know, these works seem to have paved or are paving a way for more honest and intimate romances where characters are actually able to address their feelings and sexuality. I hope we can continue to enjoy Utsumi's works for what they are, as well as promote and address series that actually do provide representation and come from underrepresented creators, writers, storytellers, animators, and so on in the industry. I haven't said this at the end of a video in a while, but I really think trying to understand the morally gray area of storytelling and creation allows us to think deeper about the series that we consume. There's a nuance behind every story and every creator's intentions, and the only way to really explore that is by looking at things critically, discussing it, and maybe, you know, writing our own little stories about them and figuring out like how they make us feel. Yes, Itsumi loves panning over muscular upper bodies, but she also brings life and grace to her characters and their stories in a way that often gets overlooked in other series of similar genres. As she said herself in her February interview for Skate, Itsumi is obsessed with her characters, and that shows in the dedication and love she puts into each of her series. I hope by diving into the story of this one creator who has successfully flipped the idea of sports anime on its head, we're able to see just how important it is to allow creators to express their ideas, even when it goes against the status quo, while still hoping that other artists and creators are given opportunities to change the industry in their own ways in the future. Despite how much work Itsumi has put out so far already in her couple of years of working hard and being a director, she still has a lot more to offer. I can't wait to see all the other works that she helms and directs, and maybe one day, who knows, she could have her own studio where a lot more creators are able to explore their own stories, their own original anime stories, and we get to see more diversity of anime that we watch. But for now, I'm excited for the second season of Skate the Infinity to come out. I cannot wait, and I'm really interested in this Jujutsu Kaisen meets JoJo's Bizarre Adventure type delinquent series, Buchigiri. Hopefully I'm saying it right. Anyway, don't forget to leave your thoughts in the comments below so we can continue the conversation about Itsumi and her works. If you've seen any of these, talk about it. Try not to give too much spoilers. I get very overwhelmed with comments. I have not been able to reply to a lot of comments in like a really long time since more people have kind of found my channel, but I have been reading and glancing over them. Yeah, I have been reading and glancing over the comments that you put in there. So please leave your thoughts. I really want to know what's going on. I don't fully consider myself Fujoshi. I kind of like characters and occasionally ship characters together depending on their chemistry in a show, just for fun and not to be taken too seriously. Like I have up here the boys from Given, Uenoyama and Mafuyu, as well as Premier up there as well. But there's lots of creators that are Fujoshi that I can dive more deeply into, like what it is, what it means, who they are and stuff. So I'll try to link some down below in the description as well for you to follow. And yeah, just check them out, learn a little bit more about them, learn more about the community and fandom. Thank you so much for watching. Long live anime series about beautiful men, and I'll see you guys in the next video. Peace.